On Friday's Page One, Warren Buffett comes to the rescue. His Berkshire Hathaway company is investing $5 billion to shore up Bank of America. The rebels in Libya got into a fierce battle with Gaddafi loyalists, and the CIA is demanding cuts in a memoir by an FBI agent. He spent years at the center of the battle against Al-Qaeda. Now he's at the center of a bureaucratic battle. I'm James Barron. All the news that's fit to podcast begins right now. Our top story says the beleaguered Bank of America got some good news. Legendary investor Warren Buffett said he was putting up $5 billion. It amounts to a show of faith in the country's biggest financial institution. As Times reporter Suzanne Craig tells us, this comes amid increasing worries about Bank of America's future.
Bank of America has been having a lot of problems lately. They've been weighed down from everything from their legal exposure on the mortgage front to concerns overall about their capital. So why did he do it is sort of the big question out there for a lot of people. It's a great deal for Mr. Buffett. Right away, he's getting a 6% dividend on the investment. So unless Bank of America goes under, he's going to get that 6% return, and he also gets other things that convert into stock down the road. The question now is why would Bank of America go into it? Bank of America needed a vote of confidence. Warren Buffett is a value investor. He's well known for making huge investments, and right away when he made the investment, stock went up.
Times reporter Suzanne Craig. Elsewhere on Friday's Page One, rebels in Libya stepped up their hunt for Colonel Muammar al-Qaddafi. They still don't know where he is, and neither does anyone else. But Times reporter David D. Kirkpatrick tells us rebels got into a battle with Gaddafi loyalists near his fortress in Tripoli.
A couple things were notable about this fight. One was the rebels said that their opposition were some trained snipers, guys shooting down from the roofs who kill you with one shot, but also some people who appear to be amateurs, either poorly trained Gaddafi soldiers or possibly just residents of the Abu Salem neighborhood who were fighting for Gaddafi. Some people believe that he may have been hiding in that neighborhood, but rebels I talked to there said, in fact, the front lines kept moving back, and no location seemed to be especially fortified, suggesting that Gaddafi wasn't there. But then another rumor has popped up, which is that Gaddafi may yet be hiding inside his Bab al-Azizia compound, which is a sprawling and heavily fortified with lots of barracks and bunkers inside. Although the rebels breached the walls of Bab al-Azizia a couple days ago, they still have not fully controlled the area. When I was there yesterday, I was only able to stick around for a few minutes before I was forced to flee some fairly heavy fire. And so rebels now believe that Colonel Gaddafi may yet be hiding inside Bab al-Azizia.
Times reporter David D. Kirkpatrick. The CIA is demanding extensive cuts in a memoir by an FBI agent who spent years at the center of the battle against al-Qaeda. Times reporter Scott Shane calls it a fight over who gets to write the post-9/11 history. The agent says the CIA missed a chance to derail the 9/11 plot by not telling the FBI what it knew about two hijackers when they were in San Francisco. The agent also calls the CIA's brutal treatment of its first important captive unnecessary and counterproductive. Friday's Times says Serbian tennis star Novak Djokovic has changed his serve, his diet, his fitness regimen, even his publicist. And because of all that, he's changed his standing in men's tennis. He'll be the number one seed in the men's draw at the U.S. Open next week. Times reporter Greg Bishop says Djokovic has surpassed Rafael Nadal and Roger Federer on the courts. Now he wants to catch up to them in endorsements and popularity. For art thieves, the new must-have object seems to be rhinoceros horns. Museums and auction houses in Europe have reported 20 rhino horn thefts in the last 6 months. That has Scotland Yard and Europol cautioning galleries and museums to lock up their collections. The prime suspects are from an Irish crime gang. The motivation, of course, is money. In China, where powdered rhino horn is used in Chinese medicine, it goes for twice the price of gold. Inside Friday's Times, New York State is asking nonprofit organizations that receive state money how much they pay their executives. Governor Andrew Cuomo named a task force after an article in the Times touched on salaries at some nonprofits. The task force chairman is Benjamin Losky. He says the pay data could shine a light on who's taking home an outsized share of revenue. A lot of Californians describe the Los Angeles River in two words, drainage ditch. And then they remember that battle scene against the giant mutant ants in the movie Them. But for the first time in more than 70 years, boaters went on an approved float trip down the Los Angeles River. The tickets sold out in 10 minutes. Advocates who've spent years fighting politicians who wanted the river paved over say that was yet another sign revitalization is coming. He was domineering, short-tempered, and anything but warm and fuzzy, but Apple computer chief executive Steve Jobs was a legend. Now he's stepping down. Times reporter John Markoff has this assessment of how Jobs changed the computer industry.
Everybody sees him as a visionary, but in fact, there are really only two big ideas over a long period of time in Silicon Valley. One was personal computing, and the other is the idea of ubiquitous computing. There's a famous physicist who had this notion of listening to the technology, and Steve listened to the technology better than anyone else. He had an exquisite sense of timing about when a technology was right for a consumer audience. So, you know, it's famous that he came to Xerox PARC and he borrowed the idea of modern personal computing in 1979. And he took a technology that Xerox had been selling for $29,000 in 1981, and he introduced it for $3,000 in 1984. What's not so well known is that, you know, two decades later, he came back in the late 1990s, and he really sort of pushed this idea of ubiquitous computing. He took things like music, like telephone, and he repackaged them in computing and made them disappear into these exquisite products.
Times reporter John Markoff. That's our preview of Friday's Times. For a look at all of these stories, go to nytimes.com. You can send your comments about the Front Page Podcast to podcasts@nytimes.com. That's podcasts with an S on the end at nytimes.com. From our newsroom in New York, I'm James Barron. Thanks for spending this part of your day with us.